desperate, begging. He'd never expected to hear her speak in that kind of tone. The woman leaned down and pushed Allie's head against the wall, gripping him by his hair. With her free hand, she pulled out a syringe and uncapped it with her mouth.
No,
he tried to free himself, but his body felt like it was filled with lead. Then, the woman stuck the syringe into his neck, and he felt a sudden release, like pressure let out of a balloon.
That should reduce the effects. Now get up, Allie, she said. We're saving your life.
I'm the guy who's going to save your sorry ass, Vincent had said. Everyone had seen him say it now in Allie's playback. But not a single person in the galaxy believed Allie. He tried to shake himself out of this god's awful nightmare. Bits of darkness still clung to his mind, but he felt them cracking, peeling, falling away like old paint.
We're going home, Allie, Kara urged.
Easy for you to say, Allie thought. He had the Raytown, but it was only ever a place he'd lived once, and he was never going back. He didn't have a home.
What's going on? Where are we?
He asked. He turned to the older woman.
Who are you?
It was Kara who answered.
We're on Hul. This is my mom, Lydia. Can you believe it? She's been here all this time. She came and found me and broke me out.
Allie felt his eyebrows raise halfway up his forehead. Would have gone back all the way if it were anatomically possible. He was an expert at being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And here was Kara's mom, in the right place at the right time. A little too right. Kara told him he'd been there only a few hours, but that was impossible. He was sure it had been weeks.
It's the drugs, Kara's mom said.
They manipulate the temporal experience.
You'll be dizzy, too.
Temporal experience? Allie still didn't understand, and when Kara helped him up, he doubted his own legs.
Lean on me, Kara said.
We're on Hul.
What did he know about Hul?
It was a planet on the outer belt. The atmosphere was unforgiving, and discarded parts had developed AI. The surface itself was covered with eel-like creatures that produced electromagnetic fields. Terrifying. Basically, the perfect place to put a prison if you didn't want anyone to escape. And he had a feeling it was Kalu's. It was starting to come back now. Jeff had told him about a secret prison. Kara had told him about a place for experiments. He looked over her shoulder, at the door behind them, at the dead screens that had for hours been playing the same news. All those experts had said he was guilty. Was he guilty? The only thing that anchored him to any version of reality was Kara. But was she even real? Her eyes kept changing color. But she couldn't be a hologram. She was supporting his weight.
Your eyes, he said,
but he was too afraid to say the rest. What was happening to him?
Come on, Allie, Kara said. We gotta move.
Let's, her mom agreed. Allie noticed that Kara didn't look all that much like Lydia. Must take after her dad's side. The hallway was a cylinder, not a right angle to be seen. It felt like they were inside a hard-boiled egg. It made walking almost impossible. Besides, he still felt numb and slow from whatever they'd given him, and he stumbled after almost every step. Lydia pulled out a handheld and a dimensional blueprint projected into the air. He understood, through the fog in his brain, that the shimmering hologram must be an image of the prison. It looked like a black cube of sliding, interconnected pieces, and they were inside of it. Lydia nodded. State of the art. Made on the backs of Hulis. The red marks show where the NX droids are stationed. She pointed at the moving dots. It meant the holo was somehow online. That Kara's mom's holo was somehow online. This is our exit. Lydia brought her hand to the image and zoomed into the south quadrant, section 7E. Allie thought, no, he knew that there were way too many red dots between here and there.
Pavel's there too, Kara said, pointing to Section 7E.
Allie felt something tight in his chest melt away. He'd known the soldiers took pee when they got arrested on Resto, and Allie had been scared they'd strip the little guy down and sell the pieces for scrap. Another tubular hallway intersected theirs, but they continued straight as Kara filled him in on the schematics of the prison. Three columns and three rows, made up of smaller cubes that moved separately, forever shifting, changing orientations. Each one ran on its own systems of plumbing, air, and artificial gravity. Allie felt himself coming back to clarity, desperate to piece together the information, clawing at it like those crazy feral cats in the Ray.
There have to be hundreds of configurations, Allie said slowly, sliding the toggle bar on the hologram back and forth to watch the way the prison rotated.
It was designed that way, so that escape would be impossible, Lydia said.
Is it?
When Lydia didn't answer, Kara did.
We'll see, she said, with that same shrug she did, but it was less cynical, more hopeful than it was before.
It's not operating at full capacity. There are about 30 combinations. Still, the odds weren't great. They arrived at a hatch that Lydia opened with the keypad.
This seemed wrong. Why did Lydia know the combination? How had they even accessed his cell in the first place? Where had she gotten the holographic map?
Lydia disappeared, and they followed her through a transitional chamber between sections that worked like an airlock, with no climate control or gravity. He nearly froze his nipples off as he swam through the air toward the opposite door. Kara's long braid trailed behind her like a tail. Through the window, he could see a hallway ahead, same as the one behind them, and when Lydia breached the hatch, they fell through and got sucked sideways to the right. But it wasn't sideways at all in this section. It was the floor.
That's why the hallway was shaped as a cylinder.
Who'd designed this thing? He had to help Lydia up, following blindly. Allie noticed that she'd started limping after the last fall, but she was trying to play it off, power through it. Allie could tell, though. And by the way, Kara kept reaching out to help her mom. He knew she could, too. Lydia glanced at the map, where three red dots were converging.
Right, as fast as you can, now!
They all quickly skirted around a corner, just missing a droid. There was a trick to evading them. A start and stop motion. A rhythm that felt wrong until it didn't. Same as the clutch on a pod. Except now, they weren't just cruising from point A to point B. They were running for their lives. Whatever Lydia had injected him with was finally kicking into high gear, and he started to realize they were being tracked by the deadliest machines the Uniforce had ever produced. He was sobering up quick. And that's when he started really paying attention.
Are these jail cells?
Allie asked, pointing to the glass panes that lined either side of the corridor. Each cell was transparent from certain angles and completely dark from others, like the lens of a solar glass. Inside one of them, he saw the silhouette of a woman. At least he thought it was a woman. She was hunched over and looked as if she might be crying. He wanted to shatter the glass, pull her up to her feet, and tell her to run. But where? He didn't even know how they were getting out.
We have to keep moving, Allie, Kara said. We can't just leave them here.
He felt anger simmering just under his skin. He was furious at her, himself, at everyone.
We can't stay either, Lydia said.
She turned around, and Allie unconsciously backed up.
Do you have any idea what's at stake? How important the two of you are? Better question, do you know why they haven't killed you yet?
He felt like his brain had been seared, a white-hot flash of confusion and deja vu.
Why did they frame you? Vin had asked.
Challenged.
I'm the spy. I'm the one who sent out the hail. They were prepping you, Allie, Lydia said now, answering her own question. They wanted to ravage your cube while you were alive, wanted all your memories so they could mount a case against you, prove without a shadow of a doubt that you did it, that you killed the princess. Allie shook his head. He didn't believe it. He couldn't even think it. The ravaging. He remembered all those people they'd found on the Zeppelin. The woman drawing triangles she believed were her son's face. Kara had said they were leeching memories. Souls. He suddenly felt like he might throw up. Did that mean they had the technology, too, to twist his memories, to shape them into a story? Now take how horrified you feel, and multiply it by infinity. And you'll know how I feel, Lydia said quietly. Her jaw was set, her eyes burned into him, made him want to look away.
Why?
Kara asked. Allie shook his head, afraid to know the answer.
What's it got to do with you?
It's got everything to do with me, Lydia said, looking back toward her daughter. I'm the one who designed the technology. I'm the one who taught them how. Chapter 23. Rhiannon. At last, she would come face to face with the real killer, Nero. I know, I'm intimidating, Rhi said dryly. But are these escorts really necessary? Her hands were cuffed behind her back as she walked alongside the man with the eye patch. Two NXs flanked her on either side, and the zipping noise of their joints grated on her nerves. The man smirked in a way that lifted the scarred corner of his mouth.
Let's just say they're here to encourage your best behavior.
As if her life were a reward she'd have to earn through being quiet, obedient, good. The man clasped the back of her neck, the way her father would, but pinching it so that her muscles tightened involuntarily. The man wore Dalin's ring on his pinky finger, which was curved around her neck toward her cube. Rhi didn't know where they were keeping Dalin, and not knowing made her feel like a balloon descending. All her logic, her perfectly constructed revenge fantasies, emptying out into the void.
Where are we going?
They'd made so many turns that she couldn't keep count, until eventually they stood before a nondescript door. It was an auditorium inside, stadium seating facing down into a dark pit that was the stage. Her skin crawled, recalling the moment Vayron had led her to the room of her ancestors' altars, the night he tried to kill her. Dalin had saved her then. She only hoped she had time to save him now. The droid split behind her and walked to either side of the room and halfway down the stairs, where they stood guard. Rhi walked down the center aisle, keenly aware that the scarred man had allowed her to do so, whereas the auditorium on the Elidio had been carpeted, with low lights and plush red velvet seats. This had a clinical quality to it. Shiny metal chairs, the antiseptic smell of bleach and lemon. A glass barrier, she realized, once she descended all the way, that split the seats from whatever was on the dark stage. Rhi's hands had been cuffed behind her back. She pressed her face up against the cool glass, watching her breath fog up, fearing what waited in the shadows. The lights came on then, and Rhi swallowed a gasp. White tiles. Metal tables with wheels, covered in white sheets and sharp medical tools arrayed in delicate, almost beautiful arrangements, like an ancient mandala. Lining the walls of the round room were more tables, more vials, cranks for ancestors knew what. Nero emerged. His wide shoulders cut a silhouette that Rhi would have thought impressive before, but now she saw it for what it was, a man playing dress-up in his double-breasted blazer, desperate for power, full of hatred.
Princess,
he said as he walked up to the empty center, bowing in Rhi's direction. His formality was a slap in the face,
How do you like my new facility?
You disgust me.
I'm disappointed to hear that.
His face hardened, its beauty smoothed away by something deeply sinister.
Because the truth is, I admire you very much.
Vayrin did too.
Rhee felt sick at the mere mention of his name. She'd killed a man, and she would do it again. She would never be worthy of Julian, or his forgiveness.
How did you turn him? She asked of Vayrin.
He begged to spare your life, said he loved you like a daughter.
She banged her shoulder against the glass barrier in anger.
Answer me!
You know the answer, Rhiannon. In the end, you weren't his daughter. And it was between you and Julian. I still haven't decided if I should spare the boy, seeing as Vayrin didn't technically fulfill the contract.
Julian will kill you first, she said, hoping it was true.
He was strong and fast. He had good instincts. But he also had a soft heart. He was too trusting. She should have stayed with him, looked out for him like she always had.
I'm untouchable, Nero said, and Rhee feared he meant it. Do you think I've acted rashly? That I seized my chance when I could?
He shook his head.
I own everything and everyone. I've been planning since I was your age, picking and choosing my allies, building a loyal army of followers. They're not followers. They're viewers, you fool. They're fickle. This isn't loyalty. You've preyed on their fear and—
And I got exactly the result I wanted, he said, cutting her off. I have millions of collusions foaming at the mouth for war. We're going to invade Rhaeta.
Rhee shook her head. Her mouth was dry.
Why?
You know the difference between you and me, princess, Nero asked, ignoring her and clearly relishing the moment. I played the long game. But you want what you want, and you want it now. Do you have any idea how much time it actually takes to start a war? A successful one, at least.
He paused, and then brought his sleeve up to shine one of the brass buttons on the front of his blazer.
When one's plan fails, you have to have another in place, one you can enact immediately.
And when Vayrin failed, I found another Rhaetan to blame for your death.
How poetic, Rhee said through gritted teeth, but she fumed beneath the sarcasm. Vayrin and the boy who'd been blamed for her death, both of them sacrificed at the altar of Nero's warlust.
And meanwhile, you'd taken care of the hardest part, Siotra, so blinded by your own desires that you constructed a narrative, set up your father's best friend, and then had him burn. So you tell me, who's the fool?
Rhee suddenly felt hollow. Instead of blood and guts, there was nothing inside except oxygen. Nero had lit a match and set her on fire from the inside out.
At a loss for words, princess.
You? Ask me again. Ask me why I'm invading Rhaeta.
Nero's face lit up as he waited for her to respond. There was true happiness in the contours of his smile. But Rhee thought it was like watching skin peel away, exposing the rotten soul underneath. Fine. She would play.
Why?
Because Rhaeta has the Overrider.
Rhee would have laughed if she didn't know Nero was serious. The Overrider was another myth. A dangerous idea someone had claimed to invent at the last G1K summit. A technology that could not only read a cube, but change it, altering a person's memories and thoughts and feelings.
You can't really believe the Overrider exists,
Rhee scoffed, wishing she sounded more confident.
I don't believe it does, Nero said. I know it. Fame and adoration fall short.
A face like this will age. Nero smiled again as he motioned to himself. But power won't. Imagine being able to speak through any cube, to anyone at will, throughout the whole universe. Imagine being able to whisper to them, not through their ears, but their minds.
You're sick, she shook her head. She felt numb. She didn't bother to ask why he thought the Overrider existed, or why he believed it was on Rheta.
He was obviously insane.
And it seems you're cursed. Everyone you love dies.
There were still glimpses of the man she thought she knew. The whole time he'd been plotting her death. It was beyond any kind of evil she could have imagined. She ached for her dagger. She imagined cleaving his heart into quarters, separating the arteries the way you might carve out the membranes in an orange.
You killed them!
Nero had taken everyone she loved away from her, though Rhi remembered the elder's words and felt a flicker of hope that her sister was still alive.
He shook his head. That's not true. Not the Fontesian.
He sighed.
I won't be the one to kill him. You will.
Chapter 24 Alyosha. Ali couldn't believe it. He was still unsteady on his feet, and Kara backed up, recoiling from her mom like she was diseased. Lydia had just told them she was responsible for all of this. When he tried to take Kara's arm, she yanked it away.
You helped them ravage those people? She asked Lydia.
I didn't know, her mom answered. I was just a scientist. I was working on ways to speed up person-to-person transfers to facilitate information flow. When I got invited to the G1K summit, I was thrilled. I never dreamed. She trailed off. Summits were just as much about philosophy as they were science. We were talking about existence and memory, and people came in with brilliant, crazy ideas. It's what made it so exciting, dynamic. But when Diak Zophim claimed he'd found a way not just to extract memories, but to change them, no one believed him at first.
What are you saying? Ali asked.
Diak invented the Overrider before anyone knew it existed. But as soon as word got around, he ended up dead. And the tech disappeared.
That's what Nero wants. He'll torture anyone with any answers until he finds it.
That's why he's been ravaging scientists who were invited to the G1K? Kara whispered. He's sorting through their memories, looking for clues about the Overrider. Lydia nodded.
If they catch us, we're worse than dead. We'd be shells. Every memory, every part of your mind that makes you you, ripped out. Your humanity severed.
A part of Ali hadn't believed it was true until now. He looked over at Kara.
Those people on the Zeppelin. You were right.
She nodded. Her face was stone cold. They'd had the procedure. All of them.
Activists, scientists, prominent figures. They're disappearing and being fed out into the world with no cube.
There's no more time, Lydia said, edging closer. Nero will put you up on that screen and make you say you murdered that little girl, and then he'll execute you to set an example.
Ali was definitely going to throw up.
Lydia took the device from Kara and held the projection of the prison layout, pointing out the safest route that had them evading any wandering Tassin.
First right, sprint. Third left, sprint. Seventh left, normal pace.
She listed them as sequences of seven. And Ali barely thought as he took off, repeating the sequence in his head. It was the kind of distraction he needed, hustling on autopilot just like he'd done in boot camp. Follow orders, do them quick. They sprinted some more. Stop and go, kneeling, hiding, passing through more airlocks, and figuring out which direction was up and which was down. And even though he'd gotten beat down by gravity, sore and bruised, falling every direction when they slipped between sections. He was getting into the groove, finding his feet again and racing past both of them. Lydia was losing her breath, and at one point, Allie and Kara had to put their arms together around her waist to hurry her along. She was limping. The last fall had been worse than it looked. But they had weaved their way toward the south quadrant and were nearly there.
"Last door. Stay low,"
Lydia whispered as she touched the keypad and swiped them through.
"How did you get access?"
Allie asked carefully.
"She hacked in," Kara said.
He thought he'd noticed Lydia's face change, a flinch almost, like an invisible insect had flown straight for her eyes. Vin had had that same look the day Allie left him behind on their ship. They followed Lydia into a cold garage, 50 meters long maybe, all terrain vehicles parked neatly in stalls.
"There's the line of confiscated droids," she said, pointing to the row along the wall.
Allie found himself sprinting for them, calling Pavel's name, which was pointless since Pavel was powered down. Allie found him, eventually, compacted into his dome shape and hidden behind some boxier load-bearing models. He spun Pavel in a circle, looking for any external damage and feeling just like a little kid again, getting exactly what he wanted for his birthday. He thought about powering him up but was too scared. They might have loaded him with some sort of tracking device or virus. They had to wait till they were somewhere safe so he could run the diagnostics and quash any added software. He squeezed Pavel, not caring if anyone was looking. And that's when the alarm started to sound. Everything flashed red. The noise was awful, like a crowbar cleaving open his brain, and he held P even tighter to his chest. Scrambling back, only the flashes of red to light his way, he got turned around and didn't know where he was. More important, he didn't know where Lydia and Kara were. Then he heard the roar of a motor and was suddenly blinded by two headlights bearing down on him. An all-terrain rover skidded just past him to a stop and reversed. The door popped open to show Kara leaning over the passenger seat.
"Get in,"
she called over the screaming alarm. Of course she knew how to drive one of these things. Allie hopped in, and when the door closed behind him, he heard the airlock engage. He placed Pavel by his feet, and Kara shifted gears, barreling 2 tons of metal death through the stalls of parked cars, zigzagging their way toward the exit.
"Hang on!"
she called behind her as she gunned it toward the garage door, a second layer of reinforced metal grates closing over the entrance. Red lights assaulted their eyes. They burst through both levels, the grates denting their roof. Once they cleared the exit, the rover bounced as it trod over the debris. It was dark, the sky scorched, the ground covered with millions of electromagnetic creatures that crawled and wormed over one another, crushed under their tread. Lydia was slumped in the back seat, letting out shallow breaths. She'd lost her color. Her skin looked gray, but they'd escaped. They'd done it.
"Thank you,"
Allie said, twisting in his seat to grab Lydia's hand. She did her best to squeeze his fingers, but it was as if all her strength had left her.
"You asked how," she wheezed, "how I accessed all those doors, how I had the blueprints."
"You said already." Kara looked at her mom through the rearview mirror. "You hacked the system."
"You said that."
Lydia licked her lips, but there was no water to give her.
"I gave them what they wanted. Mind, body, cube. That trinity made this prison possible. Made it impregnable, or so they thought. But they created fail-safes, just in case."
"What are you saying, Mom?" Kara asked. Her voice was rising toward panic. Allie motioned for her to move over so he could drive, and she didn't argue. She crawled into the back seat with Lydia, and he slid over to grab the wheel. The steering wheel vibrated in his hands, and he could feel how hard the car resisted the pressure of gravity bearing down on them. He did a two-step with the clutch and gas before he downshifted. In the rear view, he could see Kara slip her arm under her mom's head.
"He knows,"
Lydia said, locking eyes with Allie in the rear view.
"Don't you, Allie?"
"What is she talking about?" Kara demanded.
"Your mom wasn't a prisoner,"
Allie said, after a moment's hesitation.
She was a warden.
Right? Lydia's eyes flickered, even as Kara shook her head.
No, she said. That's impossible. That's impossible, right, Mom?
Lydia didn't answer directly.
The Uniforce. They put something in me. A poison. Right here, behind my heart.
She brought her hand to her chest.
Once my coordinates get too far from the prison, it'll trigger. The whole thing will burst.
No!
I haven't seen your real eye color in years. Not since we first met.
Lydia smiled and brought her hand up to Kara's cheek. Allie felt a pulse of shock. So he hadn't been hallucinating earlier. Her eyes really were changing colors.
You stopped taking your meds?
Mom, don't worry about that right now. I had to lower my dosage because I was running out. Kara was clinging to Lydia, choking on sobs.
Please? What's going on? We'll slow down. We'll hide until we can figure out how to remove the poison.
Allie, stop. Stop! But Lydia shook her head.
Don't, Alyosha. You both have to get far from here. You owe me. I risked everything so that you could escape.
Do it, she said hoarsely. And Allie kept his foot on the gas, wishing he could block out the sound of Kara weeping. He knew the feeling, pleading for more time, trying to reverse it, trying to make a different ending.
It's too late, anyway. It was too late the moment we left the prison.
Lydia coughed, and black liquid welled to her lips. For a long time she said nothing, and Allie thought it was over, though he could still hear the wheezing of her breath whenever she exhaled. Kara was still crying, not even bothering to try to hide it. But finally, Lydia took a deep, rattling breath.
You're not sick, Kara, she said. Ancestors, forgive me. There was nothing wrong with you.
What do you mean? Kara's voice wavered. Now her eyes were more than half green. What the hell? He'd never seen anything like it. Back in the Ray, some of the ladies used to take bleaching pills to lighten their skin and their eyes, but it always turned out blotchy and made everyone gossip. But this was different.
Those nightmares you have. They're memories.
Lydia was consumed by another coughing fit. Kara used her shirt to wipe away the blood.
Memories? Whose memories?
Kara asked.
What are you talking about? Yours. Before the accident. The Overrider. I was the one who invented it. I was the one who hid it on Rayta. Not far from my first laboratory.
Allie sucked in a breath as Lydia wheezed, struggling to continue.
Diak Zophim was my partner. We developed it together, but he ended up dead, and I had to hide it. I used it only once. On you. The medication helped keep the new memories from doing harm. It helped change your facial features, too, and your eye color.
It all feels made up, like I made it up, Kara had told him. Lydia was slipping away.
But your blood, it's the key to everything.
She fumbled for the coin Kara had shown Allie on the Zeppelin, the one Kara had kept stashed in her pocket.
This binds you to your family. There's history in this coin.
What family? You're my family. You have to stay with me.
Kara was crying so hard. Allie could hear her gasping for breath between sobs. He felt his own heart breaking. He wanted to grab the both of them and sprint to safety, erase everything bad that had happened.
Please, Mom. I can't do this without you.
You can,
she said, even as she started to choke.
You have to. In now, Fruma. The Lancer will.
Suddenly, Kara was screaming, as more and more blood bubbled out of Lydia's mouth.
Clear her throat!
Allie yelled, narrowly swerving to avoid a metal roadblock.
Clear her throat!
He slammed the rover into park and lunged into the crowded back seat. Kara scooted aside to make room as they laid Lydia flat, working on getting her windpipe clear, telling her to hold on, to keep going, that it was going to be all right. They worked long after Allie knew there was nothing more they could do for her. And when finally, exhausted and shaking, he felt Kara's hand on his shoulder, he stopped. Lydia was gone. Kara scooted back into the seat and eased her mom's head into her lap.
So she's comfortable when she wakes up, Kara said,
her eyes now a vivid green, luminous and terrible, splintered with faint pieces of black.
Yeah, of course, he said.
Kara ran her fingers through Lydia's hair and leaned her head against the window, crying quietly. Allie drove north and tried not to look in the rearview mirror. Chapter 25. Rhiannon. With a wave of Nero's hand, Dallin was wheeled out, strapped to a rolling gurney. An NX pushed him into the center of the white-tiled pit and took a step back. Rhi felt raw and exposed. She urged her breath to slow. Honor, bravery, loyalty, as she inhaled and exhaled. On the count of three, spacing them out so as not to feel faint. This was her fault. For all her talk of Mata Ansarili, she had abandoned Dallin. She was a fraud.
What have you done to him?
Even from here, Rhi could see Dallin's eyes were dilated. He took in the lights with a dazed expression that looked eerie on the boy she'd come to know. He was always so aware of every detail of his surroundings.
We've prepped him.
Nero walked over to Dallin and picked up his limp hand, prying the Fontesian's index finger free so he could press it to Dallin's cube. Dallin's body stiffened, just barely, and Rhi knew it was from the jolt of electricity traveling to his brain as his cube was turned back on. He'd been offline for years. Nero had made him break his vow. Nero pressed a panel on the wall, and a large hollow screen projected above them. It began to illuminate, and something took shape, an island against a dark sea. But as it started to sharpen and focus, Rhi understood.
Get out of his head!
Dallin merely squinted up at it.
Oh, we're not in his head yet. This is only the diagnostic makeup. Think of it like one of those paintings your mother loved to collect. It has an artist quality, doesn't it?
Nero said.
But we can scratch off the paint, unpeel the layers.
Leave him alone!
Rhi backed up and brought her knee up high, kicking down on the glass. It wobbled under the impact and immediately repaired itself. Projected up on the light box were the peaks and valleys of Dallin's brain. So many colors. The form of it was outlined in neon pink. Jagged yellow streaks looked like bolts of lightning scattered about. There were large swaths of green and blue, and they swirled into each other like a lush ocean. She wanted to tear it down so that no one would see.
Let's access his playback, shall we?
An ornate metal crown, 3 feet tall and torturous-looking, lowered from the center of the room. Rhi looked at Nero.
What? No!
There are things locked away in his mind.
You want to ravage him?
He rolled his eyes as he circled Dallin's body, slowly.
Don't you want to know what specter haunted his childhood? What horrors produced the boy he is today?
Rhi thought of the casual breathlessness with which Dallin had killed. How he'd belittled her for mourning Vayron. Cut away that Mizu's cube without so much as blinking. Electrocuted Siotra, who moaned in agony until he turned to ash. Dallin was psychotic, emotionless, cruel. Rhi had been certain at times. But his dedication, his loyalty. That was part of him, too. And who was she, of all people, to judge his bloodlust? Rhys shook her head. A small no was all she could manage to say.
Then, what of that memory?
Nero continued.
The one buried way deep down in this soup of consciousness.
The one of your family.
Maybe you can finally know the truth of how they died.
You can't,
she choked out. And yet, she did want to know. She'd obsessed over her family's deaths. She'd thought about their deaths even more than she had their lives. She had imagined the moment of impact, the fiery explosion, a thousand different ways.
Filling in the gaps, however gruesome the details, had been like drinking salt water to quench a thirst.
If she could see, then she could know. She could stop obsessing. She could let it go.
Or even, he continued, where your sister is.
He feigned surprise at the look on her face.
You hoped I hadn't known.
She froze. He was one step ahead. He'd always been.
There are things he knows, and things he doesn't know that he knows,
the elder had said of Dalin.
Say the word, princess. We can download his cube into yours. All his memories, his feelings, his knowledge, yours to experience. Even the moments he himself can't remember.
What would happen to him?
She asked. Rhee could hear the uncertainty in her own voice. Her mata'an serenely corroding, just like her resolve. She was weak. She'd always been too weak.
Does it matter?
He asked.
Agree to join me. Relinquish the throne and hand power over to your council, to me, and I'll let you live. You will be my top advisor. You never had what it takes to be empress. You were never meant to be empress, after all.
She opened her mouth to speak, but nothing came out.
There's no shame, Rhiannon. Not all of us were meant to rule. Join me. I'll help you find your sister. And I'll let her live as well.
Rhee couldn't help the desire she felt. Like all her atoms were rearranging at this moment, making room for the new knowledge she wanted so badly.
For a way to find her sister. Finally, after all these years.
But at what cost? To make Dalin a shell? To ravage him? To reach in and steal his soul and wring it dry? It made her nauseated. Then, angry. Honor. Loyalty. Bravery. She wasn't capable of what Nero was asking. Killing was one thing. She couldn't ask someone to live after she'd taken away the very thing that made him human. The ancestors were watching. And perhaps Vadhan was too.
No. You stupid girl! You die for a Vodhead!
Finally, Nero lost his temper. Spit gathered in the corners of his mouth. All his earlier composure had drained away, and what bubbled up in its place was his rage, his hatred, his petty ambitions.
I'd be doing your people a favor by killing you. A bleeding heart could not serve the throne. It certainly didn't serve your father. Don't speak about my father, Rhys said.
She wanted to rip his tongue out of his mouth.
My father died with honor.
How quaint. Nero grabbed the largest scalpel from the table next to him. The droids in the auditorium marched toward her, one coming in from either side.
I'll make sure you follow in his footsteps.
Rhee kicked at the glass once more as Nero moved slowly, methodically, lifting the scalpel to Dalin's neck. Rhee saw the gleam of the razor-sharp edge from where she stood. It mocked her. She rammed the barrier with her right shoulder and felt the pain bloom in her joint. Rhee heard it before she looked up. The crunch of metal, the hiss of air. Four prongs, each the size of her forearm, pierced through the ceiling of the auditorium. And then the walls clamped toward the center, closing like a fist. Something unbearable invaded her chest. The oxygen was vacuumed out, replaced by the poisonous compounds outside, filling up her lungs and lining her insides. Her face bloating, her body growing hot, strands of her hair burning away. The sound of an alarm and red flashing lights. The metal fist pulled, and the whole ceiling ripped away to reveal a gaping hole. The sound was swallowed up into a roaring, scorched black sky. The droids that had run toward Rhee flew away mid-step, their legs still pumping as they were sucked into the darkness and swatted toward the ground in the heavy gravity. She, too, was lifted into the air. And the split second before her death, she saw death. Death was blue. Death was familiar. It was the fisherman she'd paid with Julian's telescope, the one who'd marked her. She couldn't understand what he was doing there, but it didn't matter. There was no time to think. He was fitted with a jetpack, a harpoon gun tucked under his arm. He bent backward, reeling in the giant slab of alloy wall as you would a giant fish. In his other hand, he held a short-barreled gun that he aimed straight at Rhee. She hurtled toward him, forcing her eyelids to stay open despite the swelling. If she'd die, it would be with her eyes open. The fisherman fired once. Twice. Some sort of slime hit her square in the face. It hardened instantaneously into a soft plastic. And underneath the strange mask, suddenly she could breathe. The jelly-like substance thinned out and spread all around her body, protecting her from the elements. She looked over and saw that the second shot had been aimed at Dalin, and the same strange plastic encompassed him, too, gurney and all. Rhee nearly melted with relief. The bully, the madman, and the empress, together once more. Their protective shells thinned out into a rope-like plastic, tethering them to the fisherman's belt. Through the cloudy plastic, Rhee could see little pockets of air bubbling up and circulating within the substance, all of it funneling toward her nostrils and mouth. It felt heavy on her eyelids, but she kept them open and managed to turn somehow. The medical section of the prison had unspooled behind them. Debris was scattered across the metal ground, half buried deep into the electromagnetic soil, so that it all looked like an organism that had withered on a vine. She searched for Nero, or the scarred man, but she could not see them. Then, the fisherman fired up his jetpack, and they thrust upward at launch speed, so that everything became a blur. Rhee and Dalin sped behind him, tethered in their plastic cocoons. Chapter 26. Alyosha. Ali's feet dangled out of the open tailgate. He turned his face up to the sun and thought of his ma, nagging him to cover up and get in the shade with her and Alina. "You'll get even darker," she'd say, like it was some sort of threat. Now Ali rolled up his sleeves so the sun could touch every last bit of skin. Maybe he'd get darker. So what? It was like the sun's warmth fueled him, activated his insides, and made him even more pissed off. The whole God's damned thing was rigged, and everyone was losing. But at least there was something he could do about it. Finally, at least he could help Kara. She was taking forever, and the only way Ali could measure how much time had passed was by the layer of grit that formed on his arms. In the weak gravity, the moon dust floated up in a haze and landed lazily wherever it felt like. Wild, how much now Fruma reminded him of Reta. It was the same kind of heat that made everything lag, even your brain. The kind of sunlight that made you squint or shade your eyes with the palm of your hand. They'd come to Nalfruma to find the Lancer, whoever that was, as Lydia had instructed them to do. Kara had gotten them to this moon, talking her way into a trading post on Hool, bartering some simple repair work Allie did on a droid for their passage onto a freighter, scraping together spare credits to buy them clothes. All those languages she knew had helped them a lot. It had been less than a week since they'd escaped the prison on Hool, and since they'd buried Lydia's body. Kara had said she should have been cremated. It's what she would have wanted. But beyond that, she didn't want to talk about it. Maybe she was processing it on her own? What could you say to someone who'd had her whole history overwritten? He felt like a Chartwa, the way he'd run around wanting to forget his past. Yeah, there were things that hurt to remember. But his past was everything that made him, him. Kara didn't know who she was. "Does this work?" Kara asked. He turned around to see her messing with a purple scarf around her head. When all her hair was tucked away, it brought out the shape of her face, like a heart. There were freckles across her cheeks he'd never noticed on her tan skin. He tried to memorize her, tried to soak in every detail, as if he could absorb the truth of her, of this moment, through the heat between them. "Do I blend in?" What she didn't get was that she would never blend in, not really. Plus, she was wearing the duhat too far back. "Not exactly," Allie said. He stood up and brushed himself off. "You gotta kind of..." He reached behind Kara to unravel the scarf, and her messy black hair fell everywhere. It smelled good, just a little bit sweet, and he brushed it out of her eyes for no good reason. "Your eyes are still changing color," he said. Her right one had specks of green and yellow in it, like the first days of spring, and her left one was brown and deep and perfect for exactly those reasons. Allie cupped her face and she grabbed his arm. He thought she'd pull it away, but her hand stayed there, soft and warm. "You don't have to help me," Kara said. "I want to help," Allie said, taking in her face, the slight pout of her lip. His cube wasn't on. He'd have to remember every detail. Gods. It felt more important, precious somehow, knowing that once the moment passed, it would be gone forever. "I'm not going anywhere, Kara." She squeezed his arm, just a little. But a little was all he needed. He ran his hand up the back of her head and felt her thick hair tangle in his fingers. She ran her palm up his chest, then grabbed a handful of his thin cotton shirt and pulled him in. Closing the distance between them was fast and slow at once, a desperate sprint to the finish line, where there was everything he'd ever wanted. Then, finally, his mouth was on hers, her lips soft and yielding and opening, a tiny gasp, a hot breath. The warmth of them finding each other in that dark spot, in that very center of their souls, was so perfect, he thought he might lose his mind. Allie wrapped his arms around Kara and felt the small of her back, right there where it dipped. And when she wrapped her arms around him, he pressed his mouth in harder. She met him and pushed back, and it felt like the only battle worth fighting. It didn't matter if he won or lost. He just hoped it would never end. This was home, with Kara, with the girl who'd always believed he was innocent. Chapter 27. Rhiannon. On board Dalin's ship, they floated. Here on the outer edges of the Desuco Quadrant, massive rocks were adrift in the darkness, like giants curled up in a long slumber. The fishermen often made catches here. Perfect conditions for the Octoersis's feeding ground, Rhi had been told, and a perfect place for them to hide. She pulled out Julian's telescope and sought out the octawaresis in the darkness. There was enough radiant heat coming off the rocks to keep the temperatures warm, but there was no air, no atmosphere. And still, somehow, the creatures lived. Before, she saw herself in them. Rhee, too, was resilient. She'd survive. But now, she thought differently. The octawaresis were merely trying to feed. Swept up in the gravitational pull of any nearby bodies, their life was one of constant movement, from one food source to the next. Survival, it turned out, wasn't the same as living. Dallin balanced Rhee's coin across his knuckles, moving it back and forth between his pinky and index finger. It was the souvenir her dad had given her, the very coin that she'd snuck off the craft for, the one that saved her life. Rhee thought she'd lost it in the move to Nau Fruma, but Ty Rayana had it this whole time. She'd planned to give it to Rhee on the day of her coronation. "Focus," her Ty whispered, as she snatched the coin from Dallin's hand and shoved it into Rhee's palm. She'd made it clear. It annoyed her to no end that Dallin was allowed to handle it as he did. The fisherman shifted in irritation, passive-aggressively huffing in hopes they'd both be quiet. Despite his temperament, Rhee was thankful he was there. After Rhee and Dallin had rushed off to Nopa in the wake of Siotra's death, it was Ty Rayana who'd found the fisherman. She'd reached out to a network of what she called unsavory characters, seeking out the person capable of creating the mark on Rhee's face. Enough bribes had led her to the fisherman, and a small fortune commissioned him for a new job, a jailbreak. Though Dallin suspected, after all, that the fisherman did have political leanings, and that perhaps he was a loyalist. This was Rhee's trusted crew. She looked down at the coin in her hand. She didn't believe in lucky charms, but she hoped it would save her life once more. "As I was saying," Ty Rayana said, spinning back to face the hollow projection. They'd pieced together rumors from the ties, known locations of safe houses from Dallin's contacts, strange gravitational disturbances according to the fisherman's research, and finally, profiles on the people Nero had targeted for his horrific scheme to ravage the scientists. Rhee knew there were answers and patterns, and that they would emerge, given time. If they had the time. Nero's droids were equipped with a soft plastic similar to the fisherman's. The droids had saved him, and Rhee thought bitterly that it was true. He always had a plan. His war effort had become even more aggressive. Attacks and retaliations had raised parts of both Kalu and Fontis. A deep space combat was playing out between the two armadas just outside of Rhaeta. Nero was angling to build an army, to make anyone with a cube his slave. Ty Rayana touched the holoscreen to enlarge a map of the universe.
"I think we should follow the lead that puts Princess Jocelyn on Derkatz," she said, zooming in. "An allied Fontisian territory, too far out for Kalu to attack directly."
"How many times have I told you?" the fisherman insisted.
With a flick of his hand, he shifted the map to the other edge of the universe and zoomed in to nothing.
"She's in hypersleep, stored in a black hole here."
"The intel isn't dependable, either way," Dallin said quickly. They'd been arguing for days. "What would you have us do, Princess?"
He turned to look at her with those cool gray eyes. He'd killed Siotra, for reasons that seemed perfectly justified and perfectly honorable to him. Rhee still mourned the former regent's loss, and all the opportunities she'd squandered to learn about her family and the political machinations pushing her father off his own planet. There was a part of her that could never forgive Dallin, though he hadn't sought her forgiveness. And likewise, she'd never apologized for abandoning him in Navrum. The two of them were the same, relentlessly chasing down their vengeance. It was an understanding Rhee had with no one else. And like her, Dalin wished to be his highest self. But Rhi strove for